ready to get and stay fit? Welcome to Fit Positive Confident with Dr. Gordon, where the focus is on your whole person health, physical, mental, and spiritual. Because your health can be affected by so many factors, Dr. G covers a range of topics in this program, from eating healthy to world-shaping events. So relax and enjoy the show.
All right, folks, back in the studio today. This is Fit Positive Confident, and this is the day when Dr. Richard Jensen is in the studio, and we are going to catch up on all of the stuff that's going on in the American politics this week.
That's going to be neither fit nor confident.
Positive?
Well, yeah, that goes without saying that it's not going to be positive.
It could be positive, Richard.
It never is.
Okay.
Somehow you always lead me. You always lead me into regions that push my buttons and turn me into just a jerk. I don't know how you do it, but every show.
Okay, so Mitch McConnell.
Okay, this is positive in that it has tremendous humor value. Okay, please continue.
Mitch McConnell says that he's no longer going to be the head honcho over there. And there is already conspiracy theory that I've seen that the Democrats are about to illegalize, ban the Republican Party altogether, and that's the reason why Mitch McConnell is resigning.
What does that even mean? So
it means, like, you know,
that. I'm curious.
You haven't heard that?
No, I haven't heard this yet.
Well, the theory is that in France, in Ukraine, in Germany, many of these European countries are now moving to banning the parties that are going to challenge them in the upcoming elections.
Okay.
So based on those countries, there are people here who are making the leap and saying Mitch McConnell is resigning because he realizes that his party is going to be literally outlawed.
How? Like, I mean, even the craziest conspiracy theory has to have some foundation in fact. Like, what? Oh, man, I'm baffled.
Okay, so what about Rand Paul taking over?
Well, that to my mind would be a better move. I tend to like Rand Paul's perspectives a lot better than the mainstream Republicans. Rand Paul tries to be more kind of libertarian in his thinking, more like his dad. But Rand Paul is definitely not Ron Paul. So
wasn't he originally a libertarian?
Well, Ron Paul definitely was. I don't know about Rand Paul. Ron Paul definitely was a guy who was, I think, more of a classical libertarian, not these crazy whack jobs that get up on stage and dance around naked in presidential primaries. You know, I thought that Ron Paul was a much more credible kind of libertarian. I've never heard anyone on either side of the aisle talk down about Ron Paul.
Right,
it's actually
right.
Kind of surprising when you think about it. I mean, to enjoy that level of universal respect, you know, even if people didn't agree with him, they couldn't just be dismissive of him. And that's a pretty hard position to occupy in today's politics.
But John McCain, for example, Lindsey Graham, they hated Ron Paul. Because of his stance on, you know, foreign policy and America not needing to be involved with all of that stuff that those two particularly, and Biden was, with them on all of that stuff as the senator and as the vice president.
Yes.
They believed that we needed to be involved in everything, you know, everywhere.
Yeah. Yeah, well, Ron Paul definitely was, people call him an isolationist. I don't think he was ever an isolationist. It was, so look at it this way. You know, we had a great military general in the form of Colin Powell. And trust me, I'm not, you know, some kind of military hawk. I don't think that Powell was a hawk. Powell came up with the, you know, the famous Powell doctrine that, of course, we've never followed and don't follow to this day. That if we did follow it, I think would more cohere with, I think, Ron Paul's desired public, excuse me, foreign policy. You know, I don't think anybody on either side of the aisle, or even the libertarians, well, at least if you're a sane libertarian, want to see the U.S. become absolutely isolationist. But the contrast is now, if you say, well, you know, I'm sick of the military being the police force of the world, and I'm sick of paying for all that, and it's unnecessary, and it gets us muddled into things that, you know, those doesn't follow the Powell Doctrine. We shouldn't be doing that. Well, then immediately people jump straight to, oh, you're an isolationist, you know, and then it's just like dismissive. But that's the way politics is done nowadays. You can't take any nuanced position, because whatever your nuanced position is, your quote-unquote opponent is going to just grab your position, package it up in the most dismissive fashion, strawmanning it to death, and then put it off on the crazy shelf. And of course, everyone there is just going to leave it and look, see, over there is the crazy shelf. So there's no nuanced dialogue anymore. There's no discussion. There's just opponents strawmanning each other and putting the opposing position on the crazy shelf.
But this is all about money, isn't it?
Well, yeah, of course it is. You know, the care and feeding of the MIC is the number one national interest.
I mean, do you honestly believe that $100 billion actually went to the Ukraine?
No.
I mean, I'm talking about actual cash money.
Not a shred of a chance. You know, where's the audit on this? The American people have a right to see an audit trail. And, you know, you've had firsthand experience over there. I mean, I should be interviewing you because you're from that region. You know people over there. You've been over there on a missionary trip, I think more than one. You know, you've gone over there and literally taken physical aid and money. You could say way more than I could say about the actual state of affairs over there and the corruption that there is in the Ukraine government and the way aid actually gets distributed and prioritized over there. And it's nothing like the American people think it is.
Well, I have a good friend who is a pastor of the Ukrainian. He's a Ukrainian. And he's a pastor of the Ukrainian Baptist Church in Florida. And he told me personally, I mean, face to face, right out of his mouth, that his church contributed paid for, three containers of food and help to get to a particular village where they all hail from, you know. And he says months and months and months and months and months later, it never arrived. But the money was paid, and it was
right.
Given, and it was supposedly, you know. So, yeah, I mean, if you're going to help over there, like, you know, when I went, we went directly and worked with the actual orphanage, you know.
Right.
We didn't
I think people should hear this story, because when you told it to me, I was aghast. People should hear, seriously, what happened at that orphanage.
Yeah, we paid for things right there on the spot and got things going, you know, and got the wood for the winter and got the windows, you know, put into the building and doors and carpets and stuff, you know, so the kids can actually survive the winter, and bought food. But if you are giving it to the government and you're waiting for their government to do all of those things, it's just never going to happen.
Well, I think I may be remembering this incorrectly, but I thought you were saying that soldiers were showing up and co-opting some of the stuff that you guys had brought over, and so that, you know, what was intended to go as aid to villagers, for example, was getting seized by the government.
Oh, we had military guys show up in a out of all cars, American Cadillacs.
Wow. Wow.
You know, but I did not want to go into this, particularly the Ukraine deal, but the when I said, I don't think that all of the, do you really believe that $100 billion made it over there? Because if it did, wouldn't the results been different by now? If it
well,
was,
yeah, you would,
you know.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. And I think that this whole foreign aid thing is just a gigantic scandal. The American people have basically no power at this point to ensure that this money gets directed in any kind of reasonable way. How many conflicts have we been involved in and paid for at the cost of an insane, unconscionable number of American lives and treasure? To what end? What have we accomplished?
Let's come back after the break and continue. Back in the studio with Dr. Richard Jensen, and we are discussing the latest in the latest developments in the American politics. Foreign aid. I mean, when we talk about the foreign aid, the latest example is $100 billion to Ukraine. We don't know how much money goes to Israel because nobody really, you know, gives an account of it. But we know it's in the billions of dollars. But then, you know, on the other side of that coin, Richard, is you have people who scream and yell, oh, we shouldn't send that money over there to foreign aid, whether it's Israel or Ukraine or any other country, you know. We should use it here and we should, you know, buy the house for every homeless person that's out there. So, I mean, it still goes to this whole idea of we should, you know, take our tax money and do something else with it. In other words, government should spend our tax money one way or the other, whether it's here or over there. I mean, what's the proper role of that tax money that we pay?
Well, see, now you're getting into something that's fundamental to where I live. And, you know, I think you know that fact, that the government acts like because they have the power to tax, they have a moral mandate to tax however much they feel like. This is so far apart from the principle of our founding.
When you say a moral mandate, you mean they morally justify it to themselves?
I think it's beyond just a moral justification. They think they're morally justified, but I think they also believe that they're morally mandated. I think they believe that the power to tax is a power that absolutely must be exercised. We are at the opposite end of the spectrum from a government that is constrained, that is limited, that is exercising enumerated powers. At this point, the government does everything all the time, is in everything all the time, and every new thing it can dream up to be into, it has to tax in order to support it being into that. And so it's absolutely out of control, absolutely unlimited, absolutely all-powerful. We're dealing with an entity now that our founders could have never envisioned. And I'm not talking about for lack of imagination. I'm talking about they imagined that it could happen like this, but they put all kinds of guardrails in place to keep it from happening, and they believed that the American people would never let it happen.
So you basically are saying that the government is now at this point basically inventing ways and causes and reasons on which they need to spend the money.
Absolutely.
Inventing ways of spending money.
Yes. So you come up with various departments, and these departments never existed in human history, but you just keep adding to the bureaucracy, and you keep adding jobs, and this all needs to be funded. So guess where the money's coming from? It comes from my pocket and your pocket at the point of a gun. I mean, make no mistake, that money is extracted from us at the point of a gun. And we're told you will fund this brand new department that we dreamed up. And here's another 50,000 employees that after they've worked 20 years are going to get a lifetime pension. And you're going to pay for all that. they dream up ways to stock the government with more and more people and create a bigger and bigger, more and more oppressive bureaucracy that can be into every teeny little imaginable detail of our lives. I mean, they're worse than an HOA.
What percentage of...
We're basically paying. Yeah, go ahead.
I was going to say, what do you think is the percentage of our money's earnings that we give to the government? By the time everything is taxed, I mean, our gas, our food, our income, you know, I mean, they tax everything. What do you think goes, if a person would realistically add up all of the taxes that we pay, where do you think we would be compared to what we make? 30%?
It's, well, at least as a company, it's much more than that. Our CPA told us at one point that our company put over 60% of every dollar that comes in, 60 plus cents of that dollar goes out to various layers of taxes, as well as a significant amount of money into professional services fees to ensure that all of that taxes gets distributed across the various layers. And so, yeah, the federal government is a large part of that, but the federal government isn't all of it. But yeah, it's absolutely nuts how much of it goes out, at least as a company. I couldn't tell you, you know, what individuals are doing, but I know pretty reliably what's happening with our company.
How much? I mean, there is no going back at this point. Yeah. I don't think that I don't care who we put into the White House, whether it's even if Trump comes in, it's none of that is going to change.
Right. Well, the problem is that at this point, the majority of people in this country are dependent on government. And so, according to Federalist 10, that is the ultimate faction. That's you're beyond the tipping point. There's no coming back. I mean, we're at basically 40% of the GDP at this point is just the federal government. So, you know, there's this standard lie that gets floated around, and the lie is this: well, yeah, we're way in debt, but you don't have to worry about it so much because as a percentage of GDP, we're still right in line with historical norms and we're still right in line with the other developed nations. Well, there's so much wrong with that panacea argument that you know, words fail, but my stab at it in two ways is this. First of all, claiming that the debt ratio to GDP is within historic norms is not taking into account the fact that just over the last couple of decades, the federal percentage of GDP has gone from about 12% up to about 40%. So think about what that means, because the federal government produces nothing. You see what I'm saying? The federal government is not a net gain. They're not a contributor. So when you talk about 40% of the GDP being the federal government, what you're talking really is 40% of everything that happens in our economy is the U.S. government as one gigantic, swollen, blood-sucking leech attached to the side of the economy, draining it.
Where would we rank if we didn't count that 40%? Where would we rank in the world next to China, Russia, Japan, Germany, all of the rest of the countries?
Well, we're already ranking very high. I couldn't tell you the exact figure, but last I looked, we were in the top five in terms of debtor nations. We're probably way beyond number one at this point. But the minute that you take the federal government out of the GDP so that you're getting a semi-real number regarding the actual product, see, the GDP is supposed to be a measure of the productivity of the nation.
So government should not count. Government spending should not.
Exactly. It's an absolute outrage to count the blood-sucking leech as part of the productivity of the nation. So they're wildly, artificially skewing the numbers there.
Okay, let's take a break. All right, back in the studio with Dr. Richard Jensen, we're talking about GDP.
Yeah, we're talking about what a mess it is to even talk about the GDP.
But this is amazing what you're telling me, that if you do not count government in these numbers, and government is now 40% of our GDP, that tells me that the American economy would rank below who knows how many countries if you take that out.
Yeah, our debt to GDP ratio is absurd. It is an absolute obscenity, and it's being hidden from the American public by artificially including the giant blood-sucking leech that produces nothing and only takes, as though it's part of the net productivity of this nation. It's not. It's a gigantic leech on the productivity of this nation. So I said there were two things, and the other classic part of this is that even what we count of as the value of this nation, the money of this nation, the good faith of the United States government that backs our money, it's all debt. All of it's debt. But what a dollar bill represents at this point is anti-money. It's not actually money. It's debt. And so the idea that you can even measure our GDP in terms of dollars is itself an obscenity. Like, they've literally just gone off the rails in terms, it's a giant lie. That I'm babbling here. It's so outrageous. And the fact that people buy this, the fact that people accept this as normal, astounds me, because it just means that people are utterly and willfully ignorant. Because if people actually understood the real state of affairs in this nation at the most fundamental level, we would no longer be bickering over little social issues. We'd be going to the federal government. We'd be marching in the streets in D.C. by the millions saying, done with the Fed, done with fiat currency, done with the MIC, just down the list, done with the gigantic bureaucracy. You know, we demand that over the next 10 years, the federal government bureaucracy be cut by 90%. You don't get to be 40% of the GDP, period. This has to get reined in. But see, as I said, we're already so far beyond the tipping point that will never happen, because the vast majority of people in this country are now utterly dependent on this crazy state of affairs.
So when we are told that the United States economy is the number one in the world, this is all based on false numbers.
Absolutely it is. The only reason that it flies at all is because all the rest of the world is based on false numbers. You know, the USA, the US dollar, that is the world's reserve currency. It's sort of the, I can't even bring myself to say it with a straight face. It's the most stable currency in the world. So, I mean, that's like laying out a bunch of different Monopoly games. And some are in Spanish, and some are in Chinese, and some are in English. And you hold up English Monopoly money and say, this Monopoly money is far superior to that Spanish Monopoly money, or that Russian Monopoly money, or that Chinese Monopoly money. It's all Monopoly money. I mean, none of it is superior. It's all a giant lie.
So is that the reason why some of these countries want to get out from under the dollar?
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Because are they even going to be
band together and say our monopoly money is just as good as your monopoly money?
And basically they're doing that not because they want to get rid of the monopoly money, but because they don't want us to control their monopoly money.
Exactly. Because at this point, the USA basically acts as the banker in the monopoly game. And so, you know how you can borrow money in Monopoly to put up hotels on, you know, one of your properties? Well, that's exactly what happens. So, you know, we go to the U.S. Fed and we say, hey, can you print us a bunch more money? And the Fed says, hey, absolutely, because we just got a big boatload more of U.S. debt in the form of treasury bonds. And so we can suddenly magically wave a magic wand over that. And we can say, ah, that debt now counts as valuable instruments. And so now we can treat those as assets. And now we get to create money at a 10-to-1 ratio of that debt. And so if we get $1 million of debt, we're suddenly able to print $10 million of brand new money. And so think about what's happening here. you're now flooding 10 times the money into the market that used to be there on the basis of no actual additional value whatsoever. No new value has been produced. It's a representation of debt. That's all it is. And it gets worse, because then the Fed turns around and loans that money to the next layer of the banking institutions, and they give the Fed debt instruments in exchange for these dollars that they got. And the dollars then are loaned out to people. Well, what happens when they loan that money out to people? There's notes, there's mortgages, there's instruments of debt. The banks are then legally allowed to take those debt instruments in and treat those as assets. Now, remember, they borrowed the money to get the money
in the first place,
to loan out the money to get the debt instruments. But now that they have the debt instruments, they're able to magically wave the magic wand over this and treat this debt now as assets. And then they're legally allowed to themselves distribute 10 times more money into the marketplace as the debt instruments that they hold. And this continues at least three layers. So think about how we have an exponential amount of additional money in the economy anytime that the federal government is printing out T-bills. So the more debt the United States government goes into, the more credit card debt that everyone goes into, the more car loans that everyone goes into, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, the more inflation that there is. And everything that we call money right now is literally a representation of debt.
At one point, this all has to come to an end. And I mean, we've been talking about this for a long time. Because of the inflation, and you know, even worse, in my opinion, is that there is no major economic activity in the United States. I mean, right now, people are building homes, but eventually, you know, eventually you come to a point where you don't need to build anymore. I mean, I remember in 2007, 2008, you know, all of a sudden, all of the building just stopped, and all of these apartment buildings and houses were half finished, and they just stood there for the next 5-10 years, you know.
Oh, yeah. It's happening in China at an epic rate right now. I mean, we should be looking to China because that's our future right now. China has built a debt economy that's literally experimental. No nation has done with debt what China has done. And at this point, they've about reached the limit of it. And now we're starting to see the results. Well, it's not going to be long in happening here. You're going to see a level of stagnation like never before. I just talked to the president of, I actually had lunch on Monday with the president of the commercial bank that we deal with as a company. And I talked with the guy very forthrightly about the state of the economy in the United States. And he told me flat out to my face, nothing good is happening. Nothing good is going to happen. We've about reached the limit of how this is going to play out. And he's talking about commercial mortgages. He's talking about commercial loan instruments. And he's saying, at this point, look, people are used up. Their savings are gone. Yep. Their credit cards are tapped out. Yep. Right? I mean, everybody's maxed. And so all of this quote unquote good economy, you know, we're still not in a recession. You know, all is well in all our borders. It's a giant lie. It's all one gigantic pile of debt. And so the whole thing has been, quote unquote, humming along, but it's all been people and the government spending money that we don't have. So it's all artificially propped up. And at this point, it's tapped out. And so he's saying, look, I've got companies coming to me day and night asking for more money. I got no more money to give them. I can't justify, given federal regulations, making any more loans to these companies. Well, so these companies are going to go out of business. When they do, what's going to happen to the commercial properties that they occupy?
What's going to happen to the people that they employ?
Exactly. I mean, we are hanging by a slender thread here. I mean, of course, the show's called Fit, Positive, Confident, and I laughed. You know, there's nothing positive. You can't pretend that this is all going to be okay. It's not.
But yet people are, you know, the government-employed economists and experts, so-called experts, are telling us there is nothing to worry about. We are controlling the inflation and all of that stuff. But the fact is that people are maxed out themselves.
Okay, so let's talk about controlling the inflation. The Fed has one arrow in its quiver. So we'll talk about that after the break because it's a joke.
Yeah, yeah, let's go. We got to take one more break, folks, and then we'll be right back and continue with this very positive conversation. All right, back in the studio, this Fit, Positive, Confident. You can find us on all kinds of radio stations and also on your favorite podcast platform. In the studio, Dr. Richard Jensen, we are talking about where we are with our basically economy. Well, financial well-being, not just the economy.
Yeah, so if we're going to talk about fit, positive, confident, I think the most confident thing that anybody can do at this point is to move heaven and earth, sell assets, take whatever you have to do to get yourself out of debt. That is what you need to do because this is going to get incredibly ugly. So I was telling you about this conversation I had with our commercial bank president. And he is very well versed in the economics of inflation and so forth. And he told me flat out, look, the Fed is absolutely going to be lowering interest rates. It has to, because the interest rates at present are unsustainable for the amount of indebtedness that the government has and that individuals have and the companies have. And so the present rates are absolutely unsustainable. Now think about the fact that these present interest rates are still at generally historical lows. The Fed, even accidentally, because, you know, the so-called Federal Reserve, that's a lie in both words.
Right, right.
It's neither federal nor is it a reserve. This is a banking cartel. Let's be crystal clear about it. These people exist to strip trillions of dollars out of the U.S. economy. That is their sole purpose for existence. And so bottom line is what this cartel is doing right now, they have one arrow in their quiver. And that arrow is to raise interest rates. That's how you control inflation, is raise interest rates. In other words, you put a damper on the economy, thereby reduce demand because no one has any money to spend, and that reduces inflation. Well, it really doesn't. I mean, this, we don't have time to go into it. This is all a giant game. It's all smoke and mirrors. It's a shell game. But the long and short of it all is that the only arrow they have in their quiver is to raise interest rates. They've raised them. They're now claiming that inflation is down. But the lie of that, that people aren't paying attention to, is that if inflation is quote unquote down to 3.7%, that is still going to reduce your money to zero value within 20 years at that interest rate because it compounds. So in other words, compounded, your money is worth less 3.7%. The following year, it's worth less 3.7% more. Then the next year, it's worth less 3.7% more, and it compounds and compounds. At this present rate, it's going to wipe out what the value of the dollar is even today, what little it has residual value left, within 20 years. It's to zero. So what do they do here? Well, they have to lower interest rates because the present level of debt is unsustainable.
And when they do?
Well, and when we do, what's going to happen to the economy again? Then inflation is going to kick off into full force.
And the people are already they're strapped. They can't, you know, people that are spending right now, they're putting it on credit, on their credit cards.
Right. Now, so the point is, they've got to re-stimulate the economy now because it's not as good as what they say, and people cannot afford the debt at these rates. The federal government cannot afford the debt at these rates. So there's tremendous pressure on the Fed to lower interest rates, but that necessarily will have the effect of kicking inflation back into high gear, But in this next round, it's going to be much worse because people are now tapped out, utterly tapped out. There's nothing left.
So what about people who say, okay, so if everything you're saying is true, who cares? Because when all of this goes down, just declare bankruptcy and move on. You know, I mean,
what do you think is going to happen when you declare bankruptcy?
Well, my question is, what happens when everybody declares bankruptcy? I mean, people, but like you were talking about the commercial banking, you know, people who own apartment buildings and businesses and office space and all of that stuff. What happens when everybody gets to that point? I mean, has that ever happened in the history of this country?
Well, it has happened in places like Germany, for example. And so you have to look at what actually does happen in circumstances like that, or the revolution that took place in the USSR, that produced the USSR. And what you see is that the government then nationalizes everything.
Mm.
You've seen it in Venezuela. You've seen it in other countries. The government steps in because, of course, the government is all powerful. And everything that is of any quote-unquote value, and I keep putting that in air quotes because it is such a lie, it's such a joke. So it takes literally the value of America itself and nationalizes it. And so then all the actual assets of the United States of America are indistinguishable from the United States of America. And so there is no such thing as private anymore. And people ought to be, look, you have to see that this is the reality that's coming, because you already can't own anything in the United States of America. Tell me something you can outright own. I mean, own it. That's it. Government has no hooks into it whatsoever. You certainly don't own your property. Okay. If you own a house, you don't own that. Because as long as you can be taxed on that property and thrown out of that property for not paying your taxes, you don't own it. Do you own your car? Really? Same point. If you intend to drive that on the road, you're going to be paying to register that thing.
Right.
There is nothing I can tell you as a company owner. They have crazy things like what's called business and occupation tax. So let's think through business and occupation tax, because this is endemic about our whole system. So I'm going to get this out in just a couple more seconds. Here's the deal. Business and occupation tax says you paid sales tax to buy this thing, a chair, a printer, whatever. Okay. You keep a record of that, because let's say you paid $300 to buy that printer. Keep a record of that because you paid taxes at an astronomical rate to just get what little residual money you could to buy the printer. Then when you finally buy the printer, you pay sales taxes to buy the printer. But then every single year, you're going to pay a B&O tax on the value of the printer just to possess the printer. Now you tell me I own that printer. I don't own that printer. And there it is. That's our nation in a nutshell. And when you don't own anything, the government owns it. And now it's just going to become crystal clear when it all gets nationalized.
Fit, positive, confident.
Absolutely.
Be sure to tune in next time for another unique perspective on your whole person health with your host, Dr. G. And don't forget to share the goodness with friends and family and visit our website at fitpositiveconfident.tv. And follow Dr. G on Twitter at Dr. G Fitness. God bless and stay healthy.